Hey everybody, it's me, Paul, and it's been probably 6 months since I did a podcast episode, and because it got so political, I wanted to take a break because it was not the intention. The idea originally was to talk to folks about HD and to hear their HD stories, and now that it's Huntington's Disease Awareness Month here in May, I definitely felt the call to get back into that, so it's kind of what I've done. And to start off, I've got it's a very personal story for me today. I've got my cousin Amanda, who's joining us. Amanda, tell me who you are.
As you said, you know, we're cousins. I think, you know, your dad was what, the oldest, and then my mom was, I think, the second oldest sibling, maybe. So they were brother and sister.
Right. Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit about Huntington's disease and all of that stuff, which is such an exciting, fun topic to talk about. It's always so depressing to do these, but you know, it's all right. Okay.
Yeah, it brings awareness. It's all right.
Exactly. Exactly. So, who are you right now? Who are you and what do you do
professionally? So I'm actually a nurse practitioner. I've been in the medical field for about 10 years. I've been a nurse practitioner for 2 years now. My background is cardiac nursing, and I also worked in the trauma ICU when I was a nurse, and now I am a cardiac nurse practitioner.
Very, very cool. And that's in Fort Wayne area, right?
Yes, I live in Fort Wayne.
Okay, nice. All right. So I wanted to talk to you specifically for a couple of different reasons. Obviously, the family thing, because Huntington's is such a family disease, unfortunately. So it's important to talk to folks, you know, like that. And then also because of the medical aspect of what's going on out there for Huntington's and how people can get involved. So first, you mentioned that your mom and my dad both had Huntington's. I'm curious to know, because I was at college kind of when my dad started having the symptoms. What did you first notice about your mom that kind of made you concerned? I know you were young, but.
Yeah, so I'm the youngest grandkid in our family. So I really didn't know much about it. To be honest, like the first thing that I remember was your dad. But even then, I didn't know anything. I didn't know what was wrong. Like I just knew that he was sick, but no one talked about it. And as you probably remember, no one in our family ever talked about Huntington's disease. So I think that I was probably around 13 or 14 years old when I found out that my mom was sick. And the only reason why I knew that she was even like quote unquote sick was because she was not able to work like her normal job. And she had been just a factory worker for as long as I can remember. And she couldn't do that anymore because she was like tripping and dropping things. So she stopped doing that and kind of bounced around between like Walmart and a gas station. And I still didn't really know what the reasoning was. I was just told that she was sick.
Right.
But yeah, I was around 13 or 14. And then I think probably when I was 15, something like my stepdad is actually the one who sat me down and educated me on everything, educated me on the whole family. And the fact that our grandmother is the one who had it. And, kind of talked to me about all of our family history and told me about my mom having it.
Yeah. I never really had that conversation with anybody. As you know, it was very, I don't know. It wasn't really talked about at any family gathering or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And my dad, I was kind of attributed to the HD, but it could have also been Vietnam. He didn't really share a whole lot. Mm-hmm. So even when we were growing up, it was like, oh, we never went to our grandma's house, you know, just that just happened, you know. And mm-hmm. I remember hanging out with you and all the rest of the cousins at like holidays, and everything seemed fine and, you know, normal. I never had that conversation, so I kind of had to figure it out all on my own. My mom obviously eventually, you know, when my dad started showing symptoms and things, did have that conversation. So what was your initial response to all of that?
I mean, I was only I think a freshman or sophomore and 15 years old. I still had no idea. Like, I just thought, okay, so she's sick and she's still working, like, you know, I Walmart, I think, and then a gas station. And I don't, I think I, what is it, probably 16, maybe 17. I want to say 16 when she couldn't work anymore, but I still didn't really understand. And I didn't really know the severity of it until it got to the point where she was falling and tripping and crashing her car and all the things that unfortunately come along with Huntington's as it progresses. But my stepdad was the one who really kept me informed and would, he did a lot of research. I did a lot of research and kept me up to date. So he would always have articles sitting out, or he'd be like, oh, hey, I found this new like possibility of a cure or this possible treatment, or they're talking this, and he would give me stuff. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. You know, I was 15. Right. I'm like, I don't know what that, those are big words.
Right.
So, but he was really good at, he wanted to learn about it for himself and for my mom, of course. And then that was the thing for me to help keep me in the loop. But yeah, I still had no clue the monstrosity, this monster that we were facing at that age.
Right. Yeah, it's, and it's something that, you know, no one should really have to go through, but especially somebody of that age, somebody is a teenager still trying to figure out life. So I can't even imagine. I mean, I kind of was in the same boat, but I'm a few years older than you. So I was in kind of, you know, college situation when my dad passed. And it was something I didn't know the answers to. I still, like, even when I was at, you know, the hospital, seeing him, like, what, for what amounted to be the last time, and y'all were there, I still was kind of like, okay, what is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a really long time to come to grips with it and to realize that I need to do something. I need to do something to raise awareness, even if it's just a concert once in a while, or, you know, a podcast 25 years later or whatever it was. So then talk about how your mom kind of progressed with HD, or how that kind of progresses.
Sure. So she just kind of, I think over the next 4 years or so, continuously declined as far as coughing, choking, tripping and falling was the big thing. And we tried taking her car keys away. So this is me at age 18 and age 19, taking my 45-ish, you know, 48-year-old mother's car keys away, and full support of my stepfather. But of course, she was stubborn and she thought that there was no reason why she couldn't drive, but she would find the keys and crash into a ditch, or she just had no hand-eye coordination, no motor control. And she was a smoker. Everybody in our family was smokers, and she would drop her cigarettes, and we were really worried that she was going to burn the house down. And it became to the point where she also had impulse control issues. And unfortunately, when I was 19 years old, actually, I think it was a little bit before I turned 20. On my 20th birthday, I remember now. I had actually, she moved into a nursing home.
Wow, happy birthday.
It was definitely stressful.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine. And you have brothers and sisters, correct?
I have three older brothers, yeah.
Okay. So they definitely were aware. It's interesting now because, like, obviously, you know, the children are aware more now, obviously, than they were before. Mm-hmm. That's a hard conversation though to have, you know. I would imagine they were involved in the decision to put your mom in the home. She's shaking her head.
No, it was definitely, so they all moved and they all live in Florida. So it was just me and my stepfather.
That's right. Okay. All right. And so then, you know, sadly, how long was she in the nursing home before she passed?
About 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was, April. So my birthday's in April. So, and then she passed away in December of 2009. So, about 3.5 years.
That doesn't seem like it was that long ago. I mean, I don't remember that, but wow. Okay. So since then, obviously you've kind of, now, did you want to pursue a medical career because of, or in somewhat in spite of, or whatever, your mom's diagnosis, family history, kind of thing?
Sure. So my pursuit of the medical career was actually from a different reason in our family. My oldest brother, Ryan, was in a car accident when I was 9 and a half. He was 19. Probably remember that. He was in a pretty, he had a pretty severe brain injury and was in a coma for 4 and a half months. I was in the hospital for a long time between his coma and then rehab and things like that. He had a pretty lengthy hospitalization. So I was very intrigued by all of the hospital and the buttons and the beeping. And so between that and then my mom, yes, that made me want to go to the medical career.
Nice. So what I kind of wanted to talk to you a little bit about, and more so, I guess I wanted to talk to you specifically about this because it came up in like a conversation that I had the other day about the testing process and all those decisions that are involved in that. I guess first off, we should step back. If people don't know what Huntington's is, and how it, like the genetics of it all, could you kind of give like a real quick, like Reader's Digest version of that?
Sure. So, Huntington's disease is a progressive neurological brain disorder. Some people actually even kind of say it's, you know, ALS, which is, you know, Lou Gehrig's disease, Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's all together. And basically over time, which is, and as time, it's really 10 years or so, your brain just kind of shrinks and you lose all control of your motor function, your speech. It's just a horrible way to slowly deteriorate in front of your family. And what it is it's a specific gene. It's actually called the Huntington gene. That's what they named it of on one of your alleles. And it's an autorecessive. So everybody that has this has a 50% chance of passing it down to their children. I made the decision to get tested when I was, this was in 2008. So I was 22. And I believe even though I'm the youngest grandkid, I believe I was the first person in our family to get tested. So I made that decision. It was a very difficult decision because at this time I already had two children and was actually pregnant with my third. I decided I just needed to know. I don't like to not know things. I'm a very need to know person. And plus I did want to finish, like at that time I was in nursing school and I wanted to finish school. But I was kind of, if I have it, what's the point of wasting time and all that money and tuition on school if I'm not going to be able to have a long career? And so I went through the testing process and ironically got the test results back on my mother's birthday, which I thought was a sign of horrible things to come.
Right.
But it came back negative. So.
That's great. So I know that had to have been a very, very difficult, because I struggle with this every single day, even now, like, should I be tested? Should I not be tested? What are the pros and cons? So what was it the kind of that made you decide, okay, I'm going to go get tested and figure out one way or the other if I have this disease?
So basically for me, it was watching my mom. I mean, at this time, my mom was still alive, but in the end stages. She could barely talk. She could barely eat. I felt like I needed to plan for that. I had, like I said, I had two kids and was pregnant with the third. And I always wanted a big family. You know, we came from a huge family and I wanted that too. But I know this is inherited, I did not want to keep having children if I was positive. And I was very nervous about that. So that was one of my biggest things, was if this came back positive, like I was done, I was not going to have any more children. I needed that peace of mind for myself and my future children, or my current, you know, the current children that I had at the time too.
Right.
And I felt like I needed to be prepared. You know, I wanted to be prepared for my husband and for our future and what is it that lies ahead for us.
I think one of the reasons that I am so hesitant to do the test is because I'm afraid of my reaction if it's positive. Mm-hmm. Did that factor in at all? Or, I mean, I'd imagine you played out all the scenarios.
So when I got tested, I went to Indiana University, the IU school. They have like a genetic testing center down there, which is actually where my mom, they the IU Neurological Center is the only like major Huntington's disease center in the state of Indiana. And my mom's doctor was down there at the time. And so I actually was referred down there and met with my mom's doctor and did like a neurological exam. She kind of had me walk all over and she had me do some hand-eye coordination, like fine motor skills. But I was pregnant at the time. And, you know, I felt like I had that pregnant wobble.
Right.
She was like, oh, you don't have Huntington's. I'm like, I'm 22. And you're just telling me based off looking at me, like at the age of 22, that I don't have it. Like, it just, that didn't sit well with me. I'm like, I need labs. I need genetic proof. So that's when she sent me for the actual test. But to get it done, I had to go through a genetic counseling, which was one of the worst things I had ever done. I had to go at, you know, you have to have a support person. So my husband and I went together and they ask you about 10 ways from Sunday, if it comes back positive, are you going to harm yourself? Are you going to kill yourself?
Right.
And then I sat there and said no every single time, but then they would turn and look to my husband and asked him the same question right in front of me. And that just like kind of blew my mind, but
yeah.
I understood because talking about it, a lot of people who do have Huntington's disease, unfortunately do end up killing themselves.
Right.
And that's a big part of the awareness that I think needs to be mentioned as well. People don't want to talk about that, but unfortunately it does happen.
Wow. Okay. So let's talk a little bit more. So you just went to was there one genetic counseling appointment or did you have multiple?
So the very first one was about an hour long at the IU. And that was the only one I actually had to go to. They asked about our family history. I kind of had to do like as much as I could, family tree. Who all did I know had it? How many people? How old were they on onset? How old were they when they passed away? That type of thing. And then, like I said, they asked a lot of questions. And then they drew my labs right then and there. And before I left, and I remember I was 22, they told me I needed to get life insurance, nursing home insurance, and there was something else that they told me I had to get. There was like some type of, I can't remember, but they told me to get like three different types of insurances. And I'm like, I'm 22. I can barely afford like basic everyday things.
Right.
And I wasn't thinking long-term for that, which that was something else that really bothered me, because if the test results came back positive, it would be considered a pre-existing condition and I would never be able to get life insurance, health insurance. You know, that those major things. And that was something that just blew my mind, because I obviously wasn't thinking long term. But then to get the test results, you had to go back in person with a support person. You could not by yourself. They would not mail them to you. They would not call you. And then you walk in and they sat me down and they're like, are you sure you want to know? Which again made me feel like I'm getting bad news.
Right.
But once we said, well, yeah, we're here. We drove here. We're ready. Then they're like, okay, it's good news. I'm like,
jeez. Yeah. See, did you ever think about not getting the results? Was there ever a point where you're like, you know what? What happens then?
No, I needed to know. I wanted to know a couple of years before, like, once I realized the severity. I think I was probably about 19 or 20 when I really understood the severity and the fact that Huntington's disease was terminal. I didn't have the finances to get the testing done. And I wanted to know. So it finally worked out. But yeah, it never crossed my mind to not go and get it. And I know that it does happen. I know people that have gotten tested and then don't get the results.
Right. Yeah. I don't know how many times I've called like the OSU, like Wexner Medical Center, to talk about this, to plan this, to take this test. There's a lot of reasons that I go back and forth. Not only if it's positive for me, but if it's positive for, you know, the kids and my wife and all of that. And then the way my mind works is completely wrong. And so I always think, okay, well, if I'm negative, then automatically, you know, my sister or whatever is positive. And I know that's crazy. That's like in my head. Did you ever have any of that kind of like, okay, so I guess we should back up. So you have your brother, are your brothers symptomatic? Are they positive?
Sure. So I have three older brothers, and two of them for sure have Huntington's disease, both tested positive. And the other never officially got any testing done that we know of. He unfortunately passed away a couple years ago, so we don't know that. But the other two do have Huntington's disease. The brother that I mentioned earlier that was in a car accident that had the brain injury, he is very symptomatic, but he also has brain injury. So he's probably in the mid to late stages with his Huntington's disease. And he actually gets studied, I think at the University of Tampa, somewhere in Florida, where they do just MRIs or CTs or something every so often. And they're kind of doing research with him, which I find very awesome.
Because they're
trying to decide or just figure out if a brain injury can accelerate or slow down the progression of Huntington's disease.
Oh, wow. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
So did you ever experience, or do you ever experience that, like, okay, why me? Why am I positive? Why am I negative and everybody else is positive?
Yeah, I do for sure. I definitely have a lot of survivor guilt. I wonder the why me, like for me, my three older brothers are from my mom's first marriage, and then my mom and my dad got married. So then I'm like, you know, is that have anything to do with it? Is it, you know, the fact that, you know, we're half siblings? Is it, you know, I've played this over and over and over again. And I have so many people that tell me, you know, well, you're the lucky one. I'm like, yeah, sure. Yeah. But I'm still going to have to watch my whole entire family deal with this. My one brother has 5 kids. You know, my other brother that passed away has 7.
Yeah.
No, so, and we don't know if he has it or not, you know, before he passed away. So it's watching a lot of my nieces and nephews that will never know for their future. It's infuriating,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, I am the survivor, but I have to watch a lot of my siblings and suffer.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine, because I've been there, you know, I've seen, like, you know, your mom and my dad and everything. So I know what that's like, but I can't imagine. And for me, I'm like, okay, I drop something and I'm like, okay, that's a sign, you know? And mm-hmm. that's one of the reasons why I'm like, you know what? I feel like I should get tested just so I know, like, if I do, you know, like trip over my shoes, if I'm going to, you know, cause my mind goes all these places. You know, and
I just say that every once in a while when I drop something or choke on my own saliva or something, I'm like, are my test results wrong? I like freak out. I have internal panic.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's just something messing with my mind, the devil getting at me, if it's just I see this death and destruction all around us or what it is, but I do every once in a while.
Wow. So even though you know you're negative, that's very interesting. I've never really even thought about that before.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and I mean, like I said, I mean, we were talking before I started recording, you know, I've got a 25-year-old son. I'm 40 something old. And you know, so I'm like right in that danger zone, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it even more difficult. And like I work on the phone most of the day, and if I somehow I can't find a word, I'm like, okay, well, there's a sign. Now it's time to, you know, do whatever I'm going to do from here. Yeah. I don't know. It's so hard. It's so hard to know, okay, should this test be done? Should it not be done? And if it, you know, and I remember having a conversation with Alex, my oldest, and we were talking about HD, and he goes, you know, I've kind of wanted to get tested, but I really can't, because if I'm positive, obviously that came from you.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, that's true. Like, so, you know, I don't know. There's no question there. I'm just kind of going off on a tangent, but,
that's a good, cause I know that one of my brother's kids wanted to get tested. The same concept where
yeah.
couldn't get tested because didn't want him to know.
Right. Which is crazy. Okay.
Do you know about the CAG repeats? With, like, do you know the science behind that?
No. I mean, I do, but for everybody else.
So that's how we know whether or not you actually have Huntington's disease. That's that Huntington gene on your alleles. I actually have my Huntington's disease testing here that I'm looking at the results. So I have a little cheat sheet. But so if you have more than 39 repeats, which, you know, going back to biology, you know, we all have these DNA, with strands and certain chromosomes. But if you have the specific alleles and it's the letters C, A, and G in that order over and over and over again, if it repeats more than 39 times, that's how they say it's positive for Huntington's disease. And the more repeats that you have, they say the earlier onset you have for Huntington's disease to set in. I actually never knew. I just always thought you have it, 50-50 chance that your kids are going to have it. If I tested negative, my kids weren't going to get it. Like, that's what I always thought. But when I went through my testing, I found out that there is actually this tiny little window that even if I tested negative, but my repeats were in this tiny little window, my kids could still get it, which was a whole nother, like, ball game for me. And another reason why I felt like I needed to get my results.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
And I had, you know, I have some friends who have, you know, juvenile Huntington's disease is what it's called. Like, if their repeats really, really high, it starts out really young. That, I mean, it's one thing if you're 45 or whatever and you get HD and develop the symptoms. It's a completely different one if you're like 13. You know, yeah. I just can't, that's so like insidious, and it's just, ugh. Anyhow, so that's kind of not the JHD, but sort of why I feel like it's so important to raise awareness. What steps or what can people do, I guess, to help raise awareness? And what have you done, if anything?
For me, I here locally in Fort Wayne, we actually have quite a large population of Huntington's disease patients in Northern Indiana. Fort Wayne has a large neurological group, like any major city would. But we at one point did have a Huntington's disease support group that I helped run. Didn't last for too long, but we did have that. I did at one point try to set up a walk and do an awareness, but that was all a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. I would like to do something like that. And I try to just on social media, do whatever I can to kind of put out some Huntington's disease awareness facts or factoids. And I've gone to some Huntington's disease concerts. And then I also, surprisingly, things that bothered me when I was younger and my mom was sick, I always had to educate medical staff and I didn't really get it. It kind of just really frustrated me. Like when I take my mom to the doctor or she, heaven forbid, fell and needed to go to the emergency room, no one knew what Huntington's disease was. And I just didn't understand. But now I'm in the medical field and I understand because it is so rare. A lot of people, even my fellow colleagues, maybe have heard about it as a brief one sentence in nursing school or, you know, grad school, but they don't really go into detail because it's nothing that we see every day. So I spent a lot of time when my mom was alive educating people, and I still do in my daily life. I talk to my fellow colleagues and people at the hospital a lot about Huntington's disease.
Yeah. That's so interesting because there's always those forms that you fill out like at the doctor's office and they're like, well, nobody ever has this, but you know, is there a possibility of Huntington's disease? And One time I distinctly remember, and I was like, well, my father had it. And they were like, you're the first person I've ever met that, you know, had that. So that's wonderful. I'm so excited to be the first. That is weird. And a lot of it, you know, a lot of people, or they will know it from like that show House, that had like a storyline. Yeah. So a lot of it is trying to raise awareness. I mean, Huntington's is not something like cancer where everybody knows what it is. So it's very, very difficult to fundraise and very difficult to raise awareness because nobody has a personal impact. And if they do, they already know what it is. So I guess you've kind of already answered this, but why is advocacy so important to you?
For me, my biggest thing is to get a cure. Like, there is no cure for Huntington's disease. And the treatments that are out there are basically to help with the symptoms that are caused by Huntington's disease, whether it's movement disorder, which is called the chorea. That's going to help slow down someone's tremors. There is just no cure, and I really would love to see a cure in my lifetime.
Yep, absolutely. And it's very discouraging because there were some very promising looking tests here that have just recently kind of just stopped.
Yeah.
So I know that there's a big, that was kind of a big blow for the HD community. But yeah, there's all sorts of groups out there. For those of you who don't know, like, we have aface.org, Champions for HD, the HDSA. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of different ways to get involved. What would you, so, I mean, obviously you would encourage people to get involved, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there's, you know, they do an annual convention every year too. And that's my goal, is to attend one. They had one in Chicago. That was the closest that they've been. And, I want to say it was like the weekend of my son's birthday or something, and I couldn't go. But, and then of course last year's got canceled, and this year's is virtually. It's coming up, I think, next month. But
yeah,
I'd love to actually attend one in person.
Yeah, and again, I would too. But again, I'm like, I don't, you know, it's like I was kind of joking before about how, you know, this is a depressing topic. Like, I don't, you know. And then that would, I think, would really kick in with the, okay, well, I've done that before, what that person's dealing with, you know, so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That was hard for me too, when I first started going to that Huntington's disease support group and helping with that. And I was thinking, okay, support group, it's going to be people like you and me. It's going to be people coming in that are, you know, their parents have it, or aunt and uncle or something. And then actual Huntington's disease patients came too. And I was like, that person looks exactly like my mom did before she died. And it was like, this is not what I expected. So that was definitely different than I thought it was going to be. But I still went.
I remember at one of the Concert of Hopes that I did at the Tiger Room in Fort Wayne, there was a whole group of folks that came from Byron.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't know they were coming. And so, like, yeah, that was kind of not uncomfortable, because I was so glad they were there. I was glad that I could entertain them for a little while. But it was like everybody else, like, trying to get out of their way. And I'm like, no, they're fine. Like, they don't want to be baby. They just want to, you know, get to work.
Enjoy themselves.
Exactly. I mean, obviously they're still people. I mean, I think so much of HD is the disease first and then the person second. That's kind of what I found.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that we need to realize, or people don't realize, I should say, is that you actually don't die from Huntington's disease. You die from complications. Like, for example, with my mom, unfortunately, she died from an infection, because the last year and a year and a half of her life, she couldn't eat or drink very well. And she always told me she did not want a feeding tube. She was very adamant about that. We even had papers legally documented that she never wanted one. That was part of her living will, which I highly recommend everyone get a will. It's coming from a medical professional. But then right at the end, which was about a month before she had passed away, she was just literally starving to death because she could not eat or drink anymore. And she had called, like, the nursing home had called and said that she had been asking for a feeding tube, which I knew meant something, because she had always told me she did not want to be like grandma. And apparently grandma had one. I didn't know this, but she did not want to be like her, did not want a feeding tube. And she asked probably four or five times, and I finally caved and let her get it. And within a week it was infected, MRSA, which is pretty nasty. Yeah. And then she died a couple weeks later. So with my mom, she had always been a bigger woman. I want to say 5'10", and as long as I can remember, she was, you know, over 200 pounds, 220, maybe 230. And the day she died, she weighed 79 pounds.
Wow. That's rough. I didn't know that. I didn't know how. Yeah. So you mentioned that people don't die from HD. That's a very important thing. And what are some of the other things that people could die of related to HD?
Sure. You can have a fall and, you know, hit your head, you know, have a head injury, a lot of people have aspiration pneumonia because, like my mom at the end, because she couldn't eat, I just finally told them, I don't care anymore, let her eat. Like, we're at that point now of comfort, letting her just have whatever she wants. So she was eating potatoes and pudding and whatever. And a lot of that, they're swallowing, it goes into their lungs. So then you get pneumonia, aspiration pneumonia. And then, you know, unfortunately, passed away from pneumonia. Other, just the complications of the, of those things, a lot of it's falling. And, you know, then they break a hip or break a leg or things like that, that unfortunately, just with any elderly person, when they break a hip, you get deteriorated and pass away from. But
this has been a very serious conversation.
Yeah.
It's great, and it's good to have. I kind of want to just kind of wrap up a little bit, and I didn't ask you this before, so I'm sorry to spring this on you, and we can edit it. You know, can you share like one of your favorite memories of your mom?
My mom and I weren't that close. Right. Paul knows that. let's see. I'll say Christmas. Christmas is, even though my mom was not the best mom in the world, she did step up at Christmas time. That's when she was a good mom and grandma. She loved being a grandma. And she did really she went all out at Christmas time. We decorated everything and had big trees and would go all out at Christmas time.
Very nice. Sorry, I didn't mean to spring that on you. I thought
of something that maybe we should have talked about.
Okay.
The fact that we mentioned that our grandmother had it, but we didn't talk about the rest of it.
That's true. I was going to ask, but then I decided not to. But yeah. Go ahead. No, that's good.
I didn't know if you thought we should talk about it or not.
No, I do think we should talk about that. So it was, and you would know the family history much better than I do, because, like you said, I didn't have the best relationship with my dad either. So, you know, I wonder if there's a common thread there. There is. But how many brothers and sisters?
So I don't really know much beyond grandma, and I actually never got to meet grandma or grandpa because they passed away before I was born. But I know that grandma had it, and then the grandparents had 7 children. I don't know if you know the story about that, but there was 7 of them. So there was 5 girls and 2 boys, your dad being the oldest, and then 5 girls, and then a boy that was the baby bringing up the rear.
Yep.
And out of the 7, 5 of them all had Huntington's disease, and all 5 of them have passed away, with Uncle Steve being the most recent, like about 2 years ago.
Yeah. That's a staggering number. Like the 5 out of 7 is just
5 out of 7.
Mind-boggling.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, because I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot more than 50%. And, you know, it doesn't seem fair at all.
Yeah, absolutely. So the thing that's really weird with this with our family is our grandpa, I guess, was on the road trucker. I don't know what happened, but grandmother was raped when grandpa was out on the road and she got pregnant. They gave that baby up for adoption. And our Aunt Linda does a lot of family tree stuff and somehow got reconnected and found this, I don't even know her name, but they found her. She was living in Nevada, I think. And so Linda and a few other of our family members, cousins, flew out there to meet her. And as soon as they saw her, they knew she had Huntington's disease. So that was not the warm welcome that they thought it was going to be, obviously.
Right.
She was there with her kids, her biological kids, out there, and they had told her that she was in a car accident at one point and something else, and that's what they contributed her behavior to. And so what was supposed to be this warm, fuzzy meeting, a long distance, you know, sister, turned into, no, she has Huntington's disease.
Wow.
And so they had this horrible conversation, and of course it got tested, and then her kids got tested and one of them was positive as well.
Wow. Yeah. See, I've often thought that I should talk to Linda about all this, and I feel like that's going to have to happen, just for my own kind of knowledge too. But yeah, even like my dad had, I have a half sister, actually 2 half sisters. One of them I don't know much about. The other one I met at my dad's funeral. And so it's like, okay, cool. I have got this half sister. Oh you know, now she could possibly have HD and not all her family. Yeah. So yeah, it's not, I mean, I had, we did a radio interview for one of the Concerts of Hope, and the lady from HDSA said, this is not a disease you want to get on the radio. And I always kind of was like, that's really, really trite, but it's so true. Like, this is probably the worst. Well, I don't know. I shouldn't say that, but it's got to be one of the worst, like, symptomatic diseases that somebody could get. And it's so personal to everybody that's involved.
Yeah. I always felt like my mom was a pretty sharp person. Like, she didn't, like, I don't think she graduated high school, actually, but she was always smart. She could help me with some homework. And I always felt like she was pretty bright with things. And even at the end, that's the hardest thing with Huntington's is your mind is deteriorating and you're just trapped inside of your body. But, like, I could ask her questions or talk to her. And most of the time she could, she definitely always understood and she always comprehended what I was talking to her about. And she knew everybody. Like, if I brought the kids around or if I called one of my brothers who lived in Florida, she always recognized their voices, but it was very hard for her to get sound out. Like, she had a hard time talking. That was always, I just felt like with Huntington's disease, you're just trapped in your body. And that's, I would not wish this on my worst enemy.
No, definitely not. All right. Well, thank you very much for sharing your story and for sharing our story, I guess, because there's stuff in there that I didn't know. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Before, this podcast used to be called Mixtape Tales, right? And it was about, okay, so what songs would you put on your mixtape? So let's end this on a positive note and talk about music. Like, sure. what are some that would be on the Amanda mixtape?
Man, I like all sorts of genres. Anything from country to some 80s rock, like 80s hair bands. Absolutely. Sure. Some Def Leppard, some Poison. Nice. I got, I also grew up in the boy band era. So, you know, sure. Some boy band. I don't know. I have, like, quite a variety. I like some good gospel music. It gets me through my day when I'm having a rough day.
Very nice.
So I like quite a variety. It's definitely wide, when it's on shuffle, it's a wide variety.
Right. All right. So, and this is something else that we can edit out if you want. If somebody has questions and they want to follow up with you specifically, is there a way for them to get a hold of you?
Sure. Yeah, we can send out my email or,
I'll include it in the show links so that you don't have to say it out for people. But if they're interested, it'll be down there. Again, thank you very much for this. I may come back later on and do some more medical type stuff with you as far as HD goes. So,
okay.
I appreciate it. It's crazy because, like, you're in Fort Wayne and I'm in Lima and I'm in Fort Wayne all the time, but, like, we never connect. So this is cool to talk to you.
Yeah, it is. It's nice. We gotta get in person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you very much for doing this again, and I'll talk to you very soon.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.